Good evening. I'm Rick Cottom. Welcome to Your Maryland. No sooner had a clearing breeze blown the smoke from North Point and Fort McHenry in the dawn's early light of September 14, 1814, than the celebrating began. Baltimoreans heaved a huge sigh of relief and congratulated one another on being saved from British vengeance. Out on the bay, where His Majesty's fleet still lurked, a young Georgetown lawyer, finishing a bit of legal business aboard a flag of truce ship, was stunned by what he'd just seen, and began jotting notes for a poem on the back of a letter. As the British sailed off to a softer American target in New Orleans, the truce ship sailed into Baltimore, and that young lawyer, Francis Scott Key, went to the Indian Queen Hotel and began to write. He showed the finished piece to his brother-in-law, Joseph Hopper Nicholson, who'd been second in command at Fort McHenry while the bombs were bursting in air. Nicholson was so impressed he gave it the title The Defense of Fort McHenry, and took the poem to a Captain Eads, a local printer. The captain's apprentice, Samuel Sands, set it in type and began running off copies. Now, a lot of poems were written in those days, most of them justifiably forgotten, which brings us to a group of bon vivants hanging out in a tavern near the Holiday Street Theater, singing and celebrating the recent victory. One of them, an actor named Francis Durang, happened to have a musical bent. Then someone handed him a copy of the poem young Samuel Sands had just printed. Durang began reading, and a tune went through his head. That wasn't surprising. The tune had arrived years earlier from London, where it had originated, and Key had evidently written his poem with the same popular melody in mind. Called To Anacreon in Heaven, it was dedicated to a Greek poet who had lived in Athens and made a career of writing satires and love poems before dying in 488 BC. With its enormous range of low to high notes, To Anacreon in Heaven was a real challenge to sing, but the Anacreonic Society, a London gentleman's club, proudly mastered it for their frequent musical performances. The lyrics began, To Anacreon in heaven, where he sat in full glee, a few sons of harmony sent a petition that he their inspirer and patron would be. To Anacreon in heaven has been dismissed as a British drinking song, which in part it was. But it should be said here that Americans, too, did a lot of drinking in the 19th century, much of it in neighborhood taverns and saloons. And when they drank, they liked to sing. Durang, for one, was inspired. Climbing onto a chair, he replaced the words, To Anacreon in heaven, where he sat in full glee, with, Oh, say, can you see by the dawn's early light? As those in the tavern began to join in, an actress at the Holiday Street Theater next door apparently overheard and was very much impressed. That night, she sang the new song on stage, accompanied by the house orchestra. A local newspaper, the Baltimore Patriot, reported the enthusiastic way the audience received it, and within 2 weeks the story, the poem, and the melody had been reprinted all across the nation, including New Orleans, where the British were headed. By that time, the song had been renamed The Star-Spangled Banner, and it soon took a place beside Hail Columbia and the comically defiant Yankee Doodle as musical representations of American defiance and pride. In 1931, riding the wave of patriotism spurred by the First World War, supporters moved to make the Star-Spangled Banner the national anthem. Opponents argued that it was too hard to sing, and worse, it was a drinking song when the nation had gone dry with Prohibition, at least in theory. Then the veterans of foreign wars weighed in. This was what they wanted. That turned the tide. On March 31, 1931, President Herbert Hoover made it official. The Star-Spangled Banner, product of a London gentleman's club, an American lawyer, and taverns on two continents, had prevailed yet again.